둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. You know what to do. You like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover some new ones. You can grab us anywhere you get your podcast from, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give this series a rating, leave a review while you're at it. And thanks to my guests who've dropped by lately, including Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains, Les Claypool, and Maynard James Keenan. That was the 1,000th episode of this series. Big Sean was here, Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac, Thomas Lennon, you know him from Reno 911 in the State, Julia Stiles from 10 Things I Hate About You, and The Bourne Identity. Both of them are in a new movie called Chosen Family with Heather Graham. Colin Greenwood of Radiohead was here. The Offspring, Brian Ferry of Roxy Music. The cast of It's What's Inside on Netflix started the month with Troy Sanders of Mastodon. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a special rewind episode, but instead of rewinding just to 1 year, we're going to two separate years with the members of Depeche Mode. That includes David Gunn, Martin Gore, and the late Andy Fletcher. My interview with Andy was recorded in 2017. He passed away in 2022. And my interviews with Dave and Martin both happened in 2021. Martin early in the year in January, and Dave later on, I believe in, I want to say November. So that's where we're going to start. We're going to start with my interview with Dave as we got to sit down and talk about his collaboration with Soul Savers, the record Imposter, which was a covers album and really an introspective dive into reinterpretation, exploring the connection between himself and the songs from icons like Bob Dylan, Cat Power, and Elvis Presley. It was recorded live with a band and really was more than a covers collection. He called it a cathartic exercise in storytelling and reflection. And in fact, instead of me telling you about it, let's head back to when Dave told us all about it. In this part one of a rewind episode with Depeche Mode, it's Kyle Meredith with Dave Gunn.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
I have enjoyed listening to this so much. It's I'll let you explain it too, because it's other people's songs, but it's not a covers record exactly. This is something different. What is the concept and when did the idea come?
Well, yeah, it is other people's songs, but the real idea behind it was to make it feel like a complete body of work that was done from the same place with the same singer, me, and this great band that I now have been fortunate enough to make music with for this will be the third record. But the difference being, we all were in the studio together in November of 2019 at Shangri-La Studios in Malibu, and we tracked all of it live, and all the vocal performances too, as you hear them. And the idea was to create a record in that old-fashioned sense, you know, where you're listening to an album with two sides to it, and that it takes you on a sort of narrative, on a journey, you know, like all the my favorite albums, and a lot of these particular singers that I you know. Someone said to me just now that they said, did I pick the songs or did the songs pick me? And you know what? It's the songs did pick me. They these performers, though, and these vocalists in particular, anyone from Mark Lanegan to, you know, Elvis Presley or Bob Dylan, you know, or Cat Power, PJ Harvey, these voices, you know, have carried me through a lot of what I would call my experience in life.
We talk about that a lot, the soundtrack to our lives, and kind of getting that sense from this collection right here.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the way I would say it's definitely, it started to play that for me. And I sort of started to embrace this idea that, as we were recording, I realized the sequencing was going to be really important. And then I also realized that I chose these songs because they represent not just how I have felt, but how I feel now. And how I feel about life, my life, the life around me. And the fact that it was done sort of pre-pandemic as well is interesting to me, because I don't know, it just it seems to feel right now too as well. I need to, like, when I've been singing the songs recently, because kind of getting my voice geared up, ready to get together with all the band in London to start off with, and do some rehearsals, and we're going to perform this record in its entirety, hopefully a few times, you know, and some special sort of showcases.
Awesome. You talk about it, you know, the sequencing being important. Mm. Is it an actual story arc? I mean, does that play a part of it? Because I listen to it in two ways. I tried to listen to it in that way, like it tells a story from the beginning to end. I also sort of listen to it like if you were making a mixtape for someone, you know, sort of that idea as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe I was doing this for someone, yeah. You know, my own confessional, right? Asking for my own redemption or forgiveness. And to, you know, to also find a place in life as usual, for me, is often through songs and music or films, cinematically, you know, and visually. I really am much more, I guess, aware of who I am and what it is I'm trying to be, and who and my place in that whole scheme of things. And this record did start to, so the sequencing, I started to formulate that, to be honest, within the first sort of three or four songs that we actually recorded, but I already had a list that was down to about 15 songs, which we ended up recording. But then I was getting that list down to 12 because I wanted it to feel like it was a record with two sides. And once I really knew that Dark End of the Street was going to start the record, it was like, how's this movie going to end? And you know, and always on my mind was the perfect ending to it. Was to me, it was like sort of a happy Hollywood ending. you know, as the credits roll. And I think as well, for me, it was such fun making this record. I mean, I know when you listen to the record, and when I'm singing through the songs, you know, there's definitely some dark points, but you know, that's such is life, you know. But for me, also there is so much joy and in the performances, and the fact that we did them together live, it kind of makes it even more truthful to me.
It's interesting because, so I listened to it in that way, as I was saying, sort of like a movie in the way you're talking about it. I guess maybe it's because, you know, the state of the world, I came at it a bit more cynically, I think, because you recorded one of my all-time favorite Bob Dylan tunes. I'll start there with Not Dark Yet. When I coupled that with Always On My Mind, what I wrote down was, I don't imagine the narrator decided to stick around. Like, that Always On My Mind was this tragic, like this beautiful, heartbreaking tragedy. You know, it was so pretty, but like, we've seen that Hollywood movie too. That's the one that's the ending I came to, especially coming from that Dylan song. Why did you pick that one?
Well, it's just why Not Dark Yet had to just come before that. You know, it was, and in particular, I felt that record in its entirety, Time Out of Mind, you know, it was to me like Dylan was kind of, maybe this is not true, but it's just my perspective, but it was like, hey, I'm still fucking here, okay? You know, like, and I'm good at this, you know, I'm really good at this. And, you know, once again, we had an album where, you know, you were like, well, that's the new bar. That's the new bar of a great record, you know. So, you know, and also lyrically, it just falls perfectly into where I feel I am now. And I think you could only have sang that, and I could only have sang that song having 40 years behind me of work. Yeah, it takes some balls, but like, you know, you do it right. And apparently the song has had the seal of approval from Dylan's camp. So like, wow. Yeah, that was quite the honor, I got to be honest. It's the perfect song for me to just come before Always On My Mind, where it's sort of like, okay, I'm telling you that about all this stuff and I'm being pretty cynical about it, but please forgive me, because you know. So it was like that. That's the way it sort of plays out for me. It's the storm before the calm, the opposite way around, in a way.
Right, right. That's but it's, by the way, just a side note. His two albums with Lanois, like, just masterpieces. But that one and Oh Mercy.
Well,
like,
Lanois's a genius in himself. I mean, just his sonically. And this is real key, I think, to making a great record, or what I would interpret as a great record. It's about the sound. It's about the sonic, where it takes you sonically. It's where does, you know, the holes, the silence in between that sonic cacophony, you know, that's why I Held My Baby Last Night is where it is. That's why the Dylan song is where it is. And why Neil Young is placed carefully in there as well. But, you know, alongside PJ Harvey and you know, Lanigan, you know, I couldn't have done this record without a Lanigan song there. It tucked nicely between, you know, Dark End of the Street and Lilac Wine. You know,
his voice is the Dark End of the Street.
His voice, he only has to sing one phrase and he's already telling you, I mean, it's like, you know, he's dragging you through a bag of nails.
Speaking of voices, and you brought up Held My Baby Last Night, is that you? Is that your Elvis voice that I'm hearing?
Oh, that's definitely the voice of the imposter. Yeah,
yeah. So, okay, talk more about that. The imposter itself is a character.
Well, I believed it was, but quite honestly, this record made me realize that it's probably the closest I've come to really showing you who I am.
Well, that's interesting. Some psychological thing going on right there.
Always, you know, always trying to figure some shit out. If only that could end, that would be nice. So a little, but you know, I get that a lot more to these days. I get these moments a lot more where I just feel like I'm having a good time right now.
Yeah. Yeah. The Neil Young song, A Man Needs a Maid, one of the most misunderstood songs of all time, what Neil wrote. And I think what a lot of people interpreted it by, how does that fit into the set right here?
It fits in there because just being a man and how I got to be careful with this, but you know, being a man in my life, having a family, being married, and trying to show up for that responsibility, how far short I often fall. And but I'm still trying, and you know, and I just feel that that's what the song is for me. It's just this confessional of being a man, but really not knowing, but still being just a child, a boy inside that, I mean, not knowing what the fuck I'm doing, you know, and I need help. And that's where I feel it is. It's like that line for me is more, you know, it takes an army, it takes a village, as they say, you know, and, you know, I'm okay with that. I need help, and I'm lucky that I get that a lot.
I was reading about that song that I never knew that he originally wrote that as a medley with Heart of Gold. It was all one piece. And he had apparently had a line in there where he said, a man feels afraid. And that was the transitional parts. It's sort of rewrote it a little bit in my head as I was, you know.
It's funny when that happens. I mean, I'm not claiming to guess to know what was in Neil Young's head at that time. But sometimes as well, when you have a phrase like that, which you just said, maybe someone in the room heard him say, man needs a maid, but his man is afraid. and sometimes when you hear it back, it's like, there's a few lines on Imposter where I hear it back and it sounds like something else. That often happens. It's one of those things that happen in that sonic. And maybe that was the point where it was like, wait, no, yeah, that's the hook. Man needs a maid. You know, that when that happens for me, it's a kind of magical moment. You get that one phrase in a song or one line and you're like, okay, now I've got to build everything around that. And maybe it was like one giant piece. I mean, the whole album is a great album, you know. I wanted to get more vulnerable with it as well. I just wanted it to feel a little bit strange. And very sort of simple, hence just the piano and
I'm curious, and maybe this is a dead end question here, but it's like, you know, as we're talking about, especially what you were going for in A Man Needs a Maid, what that song is about, and then looking at, you know, you've covered Cat Power and you've covered PJ Harvey here, do you find that there's a difference when it comes to singing from what they originally had, female perspective in those senses?
I think there probably is. I had to twist. I did take some liberties with the Desperate Kingdom of Love. I changed girl to boy. and I also, in Metal Heart, I sing at the end. If you listen carefully, you can hear, I know what I said, but I started singing, it's not me, it's the woman by my side. You know, and, you know, that's the kind of cliche thing, isn't it? The behind the, every, you know, whatever man, there's this really, you know, this is the powerful woman that you can't do things without. That, to me, is very true. So I felt that empowerment, I definitely feel that, you know, from, we also did a version, actually didn't make the record, but we did a version of Manhattan that was really stripped back. Hopefully at some point you get to hear that, but it was a Cat Power song. which was really a beautiful song. I really like that song, and the power of, to me, like this, the power of the city over making you feel so small and so alone. You know, you feel that in songs. Songs can carry you sometimes, like out of that loneliness or out of that feeling of that it's just you. Because of course it's not. I mean, it's what I do love about Manhattan. Certainly not a year ago when it just seemed like it was a ghost town, but like that was scary to walk around the streets, and it just felt really weird. But this power of the city being much larger than me as always as something I really love about it. You know, it's like, I need that. I need to, it's like where I am right now out on Montauk, I can walk down to the ocean and I know immediately that I'm nothing. I'm just this little thing, but like, it's this, I need, and I feel that from music. I felt that from a lot of these songs. I felt this feeling of belonging and being part of, and really feeling good about that. And I, you know, I'm sort of yearning for that still now. And I probably always will be, but when I really feel it and it feels good and feels like I'm where I'm supposed to be, like when we made this record, life is really fucking good.
Well, I know that there is a lot of magic in these songs. I mean, for me, you know, there are songs that I would never even learn to play just on strumming guitar because I felt like I would get too involved in the song and I would lose the magic. And, you know,
you just don't do it. You just don't think right. about it. Yeah, you just don't think about it. Like, that's the trouble with a lot of singing and guitar playing and what it's the too much thought, you know, and you know, the more music I make, and I don't know, the older I get or whatever, it becomes less about controlling the narrative. It is there already. And you know what? You could just get into it. And it doesn't matter if you make a few fucking clangers. It doesn't matter. Just have fun with it. In this last year, I got to say, I spent more time playing electric guitar in my little amp along to records like Exile on Main Street. And there were moments when, I'm telling you, I was in the Stones.
I love that. Dave, I love what you're doing here. There is still magic, was what I'm getting to in all of these songs. I mean, Lilac Wine and all of them that we get to talk about. Dude, congratulations on this, because it's so beautiful what you're doing.
Oh, man, thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks, Carl.
And thanks so much for taking the time to talk about this. It's been a lot of fun.
Right. Thank you, man.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Depeche Mode for a special Rewind episode. Next, we're going to pick up with Martin Gore. It was his solo effort called The Third Chimpanzee that took a really different path than the other guys. It was an instrumental journey inspired by primal themes, sci-fi soundscapes, and a contemplative pandemic solitude. The project blurred the lines between humanity and nature, showcasing Gore's enduring creativity and talent for atmospheric cinematic sound. Part two of Kyle Meredith with Depeche Mode.
Hi, Kyle.
I should throw out the compliments right away. The Third Chimpanzee. It's beautiful. It's scary. It's hypnotic. And all in just a few songs. Congratulations on this.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it's been, a fun use of my time during this this lockdown.
Well, no, it's got an interesting kind of concept, and I thought we'd actually just start there, because you know this is an instrumental record, but it does sort of have a theme going to it, right?
Yeah, it kind of gradually evolved that theme, because I recorded Howler first, and that was even before the pandemic hit, so I already had a demo finished of that, and it had this. It had some vocals that I recorded on it that I manipulated and resynthesized, and they came back sounding, you know, more like a monkey to me than a human. So I decided to call that track Howler and didn't think much more of it. But then when we went in to lockdown and was stuck at home all the time, and I didn't feel particularly creative lyrically, I thought maybe it would be fun to actually record some instrumentals. I always feel like I can write music much more, much easier than I can lyrics, especially when you don't have much going on. So the second track I worked on was Mandrill. And after I'd recorded a few parts, I actually thought, oh, maybe it would be interesting to carry on this concept of recording kind of vocal parts for each track and manipulating them. So I did that again and then decided to name that after a different monkey and did that for the whole, for all of the tracks. And then when it came time to name the EP, I remembered the book that I'd read ages ago when it came out by Jared Diamond. At the time, it was called The Rise and Fall of the Third Chimpanzee, which is about humans. So I thought it would fit nicely with the concept to call it The Third Chimpanzee and kind of blur the lines between monkeys and humans. And I think the stroke of genius for the whole project was remembering that monkeys can paint. And Googled and eventually found Pockets Warhol, who's up in a sanctuary near Toronto in Canada, and reached out to the sanctuary and asked them, told them who I was, and asked them if they thought that Pockets would be interested in doing the artwork for me.
And it's so cool. I mean, just seeing that, I wasn't aware of that. I'm not surprised that we have monkeys that can paint, but seeing how that all tied together, like, there's a lot to unpack in everything you just said right there. And I'll kind of back up to the beginning here because, this starts out again as just an instrumental record, as you said, not really being inspired for the lyrics. Yet here we have, songs with no words, and they ended up saying quite a lot of things. Do you go into writing songs like this, instrumentals, needing to find a way to make them speak, or do you find that happens naturally?
I don't know if that happens all the time, but I think that so much has happened over the last few years that without being explicit, I felt like I should try and say something. And, sometimes it does feel like devolution is happening.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you.
I think it's something that's fitting for the times.
Well, that's interesting. I'll only touch a little bit on your other life with Depeche Mode, but that is interesting because this comes sort of the next thing after Where's the Revolution, which... I know back then you guys were talking about it. It was a little tongue-in-cheek, but I took it as a rallying cry. I mean, it was very inspirational to me. So hearing that you'd kind of, in this interesting way, again, using something that has no words to say, sort of, like, we read between the lines. None of us are stupid. We know what's happening in the world. That feels natural, I guess.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the last album was, kind of, political. Quite a few of the tracks were, similar sort of theme, really, going backwards. I felt like, even though I wasn't writing lyrics, I should try and say something.
When you have a song like this, like a lot of your stuff, whether the lyrics are there or not, ends up being sort of cinematic. Like it's easy to conjure up some, this would be a great score to a sci-fi movie in a way. Do you see pictures or movies when you're writing stuff like this?
I was just talking to somebody today about this, and they were saying that it does sound like a sci-fi movie, but at this moment in time, it feels like we're actually living through a nightmarish sci-fi film anyway. So maybe that's what I'm tapped into.
But even with the book, with The Rise and Fall of the Third Chimpanzee, I've never read the book, and I don't quite know what it is. It does feel like it can start speaking a little bit in that sort of genre, just from what I'm gathering. Is that at least a genre? I'm talking about sci-fi that you've been into, because even in the Depeche Mode stuff, like, it works for that well. I was actually wondering if it was kind of a cyclical relationship in that way.
The Rise and Fall of the Third Chimpanzee isn't sci-fi. It's a scientific book. But no, I think that, even if you go back to my last album that I put out, MG, I think that was quite cinematic as well. I mean, I think it's, when you're writing instrumentals, maybe it's, you know, you've got to capture an atmosphere, really, especially if there are no words. I think there's got to be something about them that kind of like grabs the listener. And maybe the easiest way to do that is by kind of giving them a cinematic quality.
Like, I can enjoy the adventure of these songs even without knowing exactly what you meant for them, which has got to be what a lot of songwriters, you know, hope for, you know, that personal connection that the listener kind of carries away.
Yes, yeah, a connection. I've always said that. That's the main thing you hope for as a songwriter. You need to connect with an audience. You know, somebody has to feel something. It doesn't necessarily have to be exactly what you felt when you wrote it, but they should, you know, feel something.
Well, again, it feels like a perfect little piece for the moment. You know, the news is on my TV most of the day, you know, as I'm watching everything unfold, and this does seem like some sort of weird soundtrack that, you know, does go along with it. And you know, and I only hit a little bit more on the chimpanzee thing because, you know, the rise and fall of the third chimpanzee, I know that's more supposed to be, you know, the human side of things, but I also think of those three monkeys, you know, see no evil, speak no evil, or hear no evil. I think the last one is speak no evil.
Yeah.
And that was, to me, it's like, is there any relationship with that right there? Because the third chimpanzee in that scenario ends up being this sort of speak no evil, and there's no speaking on the record. Maybe I'm making a coincidence.
I hadn't really thought about that deeply, really. But no, but, you know, it's like you were just saying about having the TV on in the background constantly. That's modern life, isn't it? It's like, I had to switch my alerts off, you know, during the 4 years of Trump. I was living in a constant state of panic, you know, because my alerts were going off like at least, you know, every half an hour to an hour. And I was, oh God, what has he done now? So, you know, or at least tomorrow is the inauguration of Joe Biden, and Trump stops saying that he's won the election, because that's such a dangerous thing to keep saying, and let's hope his supporters acknowledge Biden is the president.
Tomorrow feels like Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve all wrapped into one, honestly, and that's how I'm looking at it anyway, so I agree with you.
Yes, yeah. But with a little bit of a very scary Halloween mixed in, though.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because we just don't know. After the Capitol building, who knows what's going to happen?
We don't know. You're right. Yeah. Well, I'll draw that back to, you know, this music. You were on the forefront, really, of you know, electronic music from the very beginning. It seems like, you know, right from at least the popularity of I don't know if you'd say the genre, but right there at the beginning. Today, of course, we have computers that can do it all. Although, luckily, I think sometimes it's nice that people don't seem to have a lot of interest in that. Is that something you anticipated from the early days, that this is what could happen with computerized music?
To be honest, no. You know, obviously we saw electronic music as a way forward, and an important way forward for music. You know, it felt like, you know, rock, as we knew it at the time, was coming to its conclusion, and it needed to go somewhere. Music needed to go somewhere. You know, there's no way I think we could have predicted how ubiquitous electronic music is now, and how easy it is to make electronic music now. And, you know, I think it's a blessing and a curse, really. You know, I think it's a blessing that anybody who wants to can get their ideas down and make something in their bedrooms reasonably cheaply. You know, I think that's amazing and great. And at the same time, it's a curse, because there's just so much horrible music being made. You know, there's some great music being made, but, you know, if you put tools in the hands of everybody, you know, some of it won't be so good. But, you know, I mean, I think I'll look at it as a blessing in general.
I've quoted this before in other interviews, and I know we've never talked, but that makes me think of this thing that, I think it was Tom Petty. I credit it to Tom Petty anyway, because back in the day before everyone could just record all at once, you really had to hone the song. You know, you had to work on it and workshop it until it was finally ready for a studio, because that was so rare to be able to get into that. So, you know, I agree with, you know, what you're saying there, because I think that part of the songwriting art has been lost. There's a lot of first thought, best thought, and then it's out in the world, out of your hands before it can ever be worked on, you know, in that sense.
Yes. But then at the same time, you know, people can, you know, do have the time in their bedrooms to, you know, hone the songs. You know, if you want to, you can, you know, you can work on it for a year. You can work on one song for a year if you want, and it doesn't really cost you very much. You know, there's both sides to this.
Well, how, when you're making that type of music, and you've never had a problem with this, by the way, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but how do you find a way to capture the soul of something that, you know, conceptually, ideally, might be cold at the beginning?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think it's something that you. I don't know. I think somewhere that you're inherently aware of or something. I don't know. You know, I think that, you know, I've been a massive fan of music since I was 10 years old. And I think, you know, when you just listen to that much music across all kinds of genres, you know, it's not like I only listen to electronic music. I listen to absolutely everything. I used to be like fascinated by gospel music growing up. I used to be fascinated by doo-wop. I used to be, you know, fascinated by blues music and rock music, everything, you know, music from the 20s, music from the 30s. And, you know, I think that all goes in and it goes into a blender in your head. And somehow I think it comes out, and it hopefully will be interesting when it comes out, because you've put a lot of learning into what you feel is good that goes into the blender.
Luckily, it's always come out. I mean, you've written so many classics throughout the years, and you're still finding new things to do with them. I mean, since we're sort of on this AI subject, what was I reading about Soundwave's art of Depeche Mode songs?
Yeah, there's an artist. I can't remember where he's from. I think he might be in Austin or somewhere. And he's done some Soundwave art, and it was for a friend of mine, really, who runs a charity called Notes for Notes, and they have studios around the country. I think they've got like 25 or so now in different cities around America, and they provide you know, tuition and studios for, you know, anyone for free, you know, who wants to go in and learn, you know, for kids, you know, not for adults, for kids, and so. Yeah, the Soundwave art was for that, really. I just signed a bunch of it, and the band has signed a bunch of it before as well, and they sell it for charity.
Yeah, such a cool way to, you know, a three-dimensional version of the song, I guess. It's that stuff's really, really interesting, what you all have been doing. And you know, it's interesting how we're talking about the contradiction of that and then the artwork for this one, as you said, which actually has, you know, a monkey painting it. You know, it's so, I guess, the two sides of that coin.
Yeah, well, what you mean, one being so kind of like technological and the other one so primitive in a way, kind of.
Right. It's just interesting that they kind of arrive at the same time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that the artwork for this looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw the vinyl for the first time a few days ago, and it just looks amazing on vinyl. Yeah, I think the whole package looks really good, actually.
No, for the pictures.
Very pleased with it.
Yeah. I'll wrap up. You know, you, of course, have a long tradition of the remixes. Are there going to be other versions of these Chimpanzee tracks right here? Are we going to get remix versions of these too?
Yeah, we asked 10 different people to do remixes, because usually you ask for more remixes than you need, you know, expecting that some of them you might reject because they're not as they didn't turn out the way you expected, and they all came back and they're all really good, and I think they're all outstanding. So at some point, I don't know exactly how we're going to do it. I think they will, some of them will definitely be released digitally first, but at some point I think they'll definitely be coming out on CD and vinyl as well.
Anybody that you can say who did it yet, or is that still under wraps?
I think it should still be under wraps at this point, okay, because I don't know exactly when the first tracks are going to hit, you know, digitally even. So, yeah, maybe a bit early.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I certainly do enjoy the music that you're doing, Martin. And, you know, with your solo stuff, with Depeche Mode, I was listening to Dream On the other day. It's one of my all-time favorite songs. I mean, you continue to amaze me, you know, in the past and in the present. I can't wait to hear what's next. Thank you so much for all that you've done.
Oh. All right, thank you very much. Thanks.
And we'll see you around. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Yes, we'll see you in the real world soon.
All right, take care. Bye.
See you, thanks.
Now, since Martin and I kind of referenced the last Depeche Mode record called Spirit, I'm going to include here as a bonus interview me talking with Andrew Fletcher of Depeche Mode. It was that album that we were talking about, Spirit, and its political leanings. We also got to discuss some of the stories behind No More and Scum and the lead single Where's the Revolution, as well as the preparations for that tour that was happening. So part two of Kyle Meredith with Depeche Mode.
Hi, Kyle.
How are you, Andy?
Yeah, good, thanks.
It's a really big honor to talk to you. I've been a fan for a long time, and I really love this new record, Spirit.
Thank you.
You guys have outdone yourself once again, and at this point in the game, that is always impressive.
We try our hardest.
And let's start with the obvious things. I know what everyone's saying about this record, with it being sort of, you know, the political side of things, even though I know it wasn't completely written with that in mind. But given the content, did you all know what you were going to be, you know, singing about, talking about, relating about when you went into the sessions in the first place?
Yeah, I think we thought that the political situation was pretty bad. Then, of course, we didn't know what was coming. You know, so we've released this record now, and you know, you've got Brexit in Britain, you've got Trump as president. You know, the situation politically is much worse, really, mm-hmm. than when we were writing the album.
Do the songs change for you after the election, the way it went? Because obviously, when we heard it as fans, that's the first things that we thought of, even though these songs were written long before that. Did they change for you as well?
No, they didn't. I mean, to be fair, Trump had just announced his candidacy when Martin was writing, although he never thought that Trump would actually win it. We've done an album like this before, our third album, Construction Time Again. And, you know, we write songs in general about politics, but we usually use analogies like sex or religion, you know, to get the message across, when this is a lot more direct.
I mean, especially, I mean, the first time I heard of it, you hear a song like Scum, and you know, it's like there is no hiding what we're talking about here, you know, and geez, you can just go down most of the track list and you don't even have to hear the song, just looking at the lyrics themselves. I mean, it is your most direct album that I can recall ever, which is,
you know, it's good that, you know, when we're sort of in our 50s, when we should be relaxing, and you know, we've always written songs about the world we live in. And like I say, this is a bit more direct. It's pretty much carries on from what we've been doing all our career.
You know, with Dave and Martin living in the U.S., you're still in England, right?
Yeah.
So they're seeing it from the American side, and you're seeing it from, I guess, you know, the Brexit side and the Britain side. And
well, they
America
were very angry about Brexit as well.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, and I was too, and I've never been there.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Dave is much more political in America than he was in England, and Martin as well, I think, is definitely more political than he was in England. Brexit, for, you know, if you remember that it was virtually a 50% vote, mm-hmm. you know, it's crazy that a major constitutional change should be made, you know, by 100,000 votes, you know.
I do get it, though, with art. I would feel, and I haven't been a musician for a while now, it seems like you need a stone to push against. And while none of us would wish this would happen on the world, it seems like it does allow for you guys to push up against something to get the best art. And maybe your producer, I know, working with James Ford, did he offer some of that too, giving you a bit of a challenge?
Well, James and myself were slightly worried in the beginning with the song content, the political aspect, mm-hmm. but you know, as we recorded, you know, the situation was evolving all the time, so we swung round to actually thinking, yeah, this is the right way to go.
Yeah, what were your concerns?
Well, you know, when sometimes you get bands that are political bands, you've got to be very careful that you're not stung. You know, I think the good why we can get around it is because it's not as if every one of our albums is like this, you know. So it's a real surprise.
It's also nice how it's worded because it's almost like a question with a lot of these things, a challenge even. It's not that you guys are so much planting the flag down, although, again, I'll reference Scum maybe as a time you are, but a lot of, like, where's the revolution, you know? Like, I understand, like, that's...
I mean, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I mean, we don't expect a revolution. It's just a bit of tongue-in-cheek.
Other songs on here, too, like No More, one of my favorites from the record, really feels like it has that classic Depeche Mode sound.
That is the more classic Depeche Mode on that track.
How did that one come about, and is there any story behind it for yourself, too?
Not really. It's one of Dave's songs. You know, he came in with a few demos, and that was changed quite a lot from his original demo. And his two other songs on the album, Poison, was just the same as the demo, really. You know, but Cover Me, that really changed a lot. That's one of my favorite songs on the album.
I was actually going to ask if there were any real standout moments from the sessions for you.
I really like Scum. It's the weirdest rhythm. In fact, we're not playing it live because we're not sure if it can be played live.
It's a shame.
It's some weird beat.
Speaking of the tour, what are the preparations like for this tour? I mean, what are the plans going like?
We don't know what. Next week when we go to Stockholm, we'll actually see the set for the first time and see all the films that Anton Corbijn has been making. We put 100% trust in him.
Wow, that is a lot of trust.
So it's going to be like the unveiling. I always tell a similar story one of our earlier tours when we were doing our production rehearsals in Pensacola. And when we walked in, all the lights were on, and our stage set looked like Stonehenge in Spinal Tap.
Let's hope the rest of that doesn't play.
There's always that fear when we walk in next week into the venue in Stockholm that we will get the same shock.
Hopefully it doesn't play out like the rest of that movie. What about yourself personally? I mean, you've been touring most of your life at this point, but I know as you get older, it changes the preparations. Do you have to go through any rigorous workouts, campaigns for yourself?
Well, funny you should say that. I've lost about 30-odd pounds, and I didn't do that for the tour. I just started walking every morning for about 4 or 5 miles, so I'm in pretty good shape.
Wow. Congratulations.
The other guys are very fit as well.
Yeah. That's a pretty nice place to be right there.
But, you know, as you get older, you know, traveling around does become a bit harder. The concerts are fine. So you really have to be, in the days when we used to party all the time, you know, you couldn't do that now and give a 100% performance.
So thank goodness you've got to jump on it as it goes. Well, again, I seriously love this record. It is up there, probably a top 5 Depeche Mode record for me. I love that you guys are doing it. Not every band is able to pull this off, you know. What do they say? Art, you get 10 good years in art, and you guys have far exceeded that. So,
yeah, it's a complete dream come true for us. You know, we only expected to be around for a few years, and here we are now, still making good music. We've got lots of fans out there waiting for us. You know, it's a great feeling.
Well, I'm appreciative of it as well. And I'll say in closing, apropos to none of that, once a year, I love to go to YouTube and watch the TV performance of Just Can't Get Enough when you all were just kids. And it makes me so happy every time I see that.
Can I just point out that in those videos just started, and no one really knew what to do with them. And we were only about 18 or 19 at the time.
Oh, you can tell. I mean, you look 14 and 15, so yeah.
That's one of the better ones, early ones.
Oh, it really is a joy to watch. It really is.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, I appreciate the call. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Right, bye.
And we'll be right back, right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith now, part 3 of this Rewind episode with Depeche Mode. This one, as I mentioned, goes back to 2017, the late Andy Fletcher. The band had just, Depeche Mode, had just released Spirits, Their album, it was politically charged, recorded right at a moment when the world seemed especially polarized. And Fletcher spoke candidly about it, acknowledged that Trump's election and Brexit had provided really unexpected relevance to the record's lyrics, even though the songs were written before these events fully unfolded. So let's jump into a part three of a Rewind episode with Depeche Mode. It's Kyle Meredith with Andy Fletcher.
Hi, Kyle.
You guys have outdone yourself once again, and at this point in the game, that is always impressive.
We try our hardest. Yeah.
And let's start with the obvious things. I know what everyone's saying about this record, with it being sort of, you know, the political side of things, even though I know it wasn't completely written with that in mind. But given the content, did you all know what you were going to be, you know, singing about, talking about, relating about when you went into the sessions in the first place?
Yeah, I think we thought that the political situation was pretty bad. But then, of course, we didn't know what was coming. You know, so we've released this record now, and, you know, you've got Brexit in Britain, you've got Trump as president. You know, the situation politically is much worse, really, mm-hmm. than when we were writing the album.
Do the songs change for you after the election, the way it went? Because obviously, when we heard it as fans, that's the first things that we thought of, even though these songs were written long before that. Did they change for you as well?
No, they didn't. I mean, to be fair, Trump had just announced his candidacy when Martin was writing, although he never thought that Trump would actually win it. We've done an album like this before, our third album, Construction Time Again. And, you know, we write songs in general about politics, but we usually use analogies like sex or religion, you know, to get the message across, when this is a lot more direct.
I mean, especially, I mean, the first time I heard of it, you hear a song like Scum, and you know, it's like there is no hiding what we're talking about here, you know. And and geez, you can just go down most of the track list and you don't even have to hear the song, just looking at the lyrics themselves. I mean, it is your most direct album that I can recall ever, which is,
you know, it's good that, you know, when we're sort of in our 50s, when we should be relaxing, and we've always written songs about the world we live in. And like I say, this is a bit more direct. It's pretty much carries on from what we've been doing all our career.
You know, with Dave and Martin living in the U.S., you're still in England, right?
Yeah.
So they're seeing it from the American side, and you're seeing it from, I guess, you know, the Brexit side and the Britain side. And
well, they
America
were very angry about Brexit as well.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, and I was too, and I've never been there.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Dave is much more political in America than he was in England, and Martin as well, I think, is definitely more political than he was in England. Brexit, for, you know, if you remember that it was virtually a 50% vote, mm-hmm. you know, it's crazy that a major constitutional change should be made, you know, by 100,000 votes, you know.
I do get it, though. With art, I would feel, and I haven't been a musician for a while now, it seems like you need a stone to push against. And while none of us would wish this would happen on the world, it seems like it does allow for you guys to push up against something to get the best art. And maybe your producer, I know, working with James Ford, did he offer some of that too, giving you a bit of a challenge?
Well, James and myself were slightly worried in the beginning with the song content, the political aspect. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we recorded, you know, the situation was evolving all the time. So we swung round to actually thinking, yeah, this is the right way to go.
Yeah. What were your concerns?
Well, you know, when sometimes you get bands that are political bands, you've got to be very careful that you're not stung. You know, I think the good... Why we can get around it is because it's not as if every one of our albums is like this, you know. So it's a real surprise.
It's also nice how it's worded, because it's almost like a question with a lot of these things, a challenge even. It's not that you guys are so much planting the flag down, although, again, I'll reference Scum maybe as a time you are, but a lot of, like, where's the revolution, you know? Like, I understand, like, that's...
I mean, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I mean, we don't expect a revolution. It's just a bit of tongue-in-cheek.
Other songs on here, too, like No More, one of my favorites from the record, really feels like it has that classic Depeche Mode sound.
That is the more classic Depeche Mode on that track.
How did that one come about, and is there any story behind it for yourself, too?
Not really. It's one of Dave's songs. You know, he came in with a few demos, and that was changed quite a lot from his original demo. And his two other songs on the album, Poison, was just the same as the demo, really, you know. Mm-hmm. But Cover Me, that really changed a lot. That's one of my favorite songs on the album.
I was actually going to ask if there were any real standout moments from the sessions.
I really like Scum. It's the weirdest rhythm. In fact, we're not playing it live because we're not sure if it can be played live.
It's a shame.
It's some weird beat.
Speaking of the tour, what are the preparations like for this tour? I mean, what are the plans going like?
We don't know what. Next week when we go to Stockholm, we'll actually see the set for the first time and see all the films that Anton Corbijn has been making. We put 100% trust in him.
Wow, that is a lot of trust.
So it's going to be like the unveiling. I always tell a similar story one of our earlier tours when we were doing our production rehearsals in Pensacola. And when we walked in, all the lights were on and our stage set looked like Stonehenge in Spinal Tap.
Let's hope the rest of that doesn't play.
There's always that fear when we walk in next week into the venue in Stockholm that we will get the same shock.
Hopefully it doesn't play out like the rest of that movie. What about yourself personally? I mean, you've been touring most of your life at this point, but I know as you get older, it changes the preparations. Do you have to go through any rigorous workouts, campaigns for yourself?
Well, funny you should say that. I've lost about 30-odd pounds, and I didn't do that for the tour. I just started walking every morning for about 4 or 5 miles. So I'm in pretty good shape.
Wow. Congratulations.
The other guys are very fit as well.
Yeah, that's a pretty nice place to be right there.
But, as you get older, traveling around does become a bit harder. The concerts are fine. So you really have to be, in the days when we used to party all the time, you couldn't do that now and give a 100% performance.
So thank goodness you've got to jump on it as it goes. Well, again, I seriously love this record. It is up there, probably a top 5 Depeche Mode record for me. I love that you guys are doing it. Not every band is able to pull this off. What do they say? Art, you get 10 good years in art, and you guys have far exceeded that. So,
yeah, it's a complete dream come true for us. We only expected to be around for a few years, and here we are now, still making good music. We've got lots of fans out there waiting for us. It's a great feeling.
Well, I'm appreciative of it as well. And I'll say in closing, apropos to none of that, once a year, I love to go to YouTube and watch the TV performance of Just Can't Get Enough when you all were just kids. And it makes me so happy every time I see that.
Can I just point out that in those videos just started, and no one really knew what to do with them. And we were only about 18 or 19 at the time.
Oh, you can tell. I mean, you look 14 and 15, so
yeah. That's one of the better ones, early ones.
Oh, it really is a joy to watch. It really is.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate the call. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And my thanks to Andy, to Martin, to Dave. My thanks to Depeche Mode. And my thanks to you for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, if you're not already, hit that subscribe button. You'll get 3 new interviews just like this sent your way every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions. Or again, anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And don't forget to give a rating, leave a review as well. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows, in fact, featured some classics and favorites from Linda Ronstadt, Fontella Bass, Joya Ladekin, Soundgarden, The Breeders, Alanis Morissette, Tori Amos, U2, The Smile, Haim, Okro Medicine Show, Counting Crows, Eddie Vedder, Lou Reed, Hozier, and my interview with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights, starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.